What's up, everybody? This is Jordan Rossler and Derek Ambrosen from the Dynasty Builders Podcast, part of the DLF family of podcasts.
Each week, we use film analysis, rookie breakdowns, ADP, analytic tools,
and a dose of humor
to ensure that you get actionable and practical advice from each and every episode to help you build a dynasty.
Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got em. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. But I'ma keep tapping return, I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winnings to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict, I'm a climber with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict,
Russell Rocky.
Other names, Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Dynasty Outhouse, and I have a trading problem.
I am Rocky Petrella, and I, too, have a trading problem.
I am Daddy's Home. I love sandwiches and also have a trading problem.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Session 169, nice, of the Trade Addicts Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts, also a proud member of the Dynasty Addicts Podcast Network, the DAP Network, if you will. And, oh, I was about to say Rocky left me hanging that time, but he was a little late.
Just too slow.
Oh, God, my kids are so into that right now. And, of course, I play along because it's effing adorable. Up high, down low.
Too slow.
You got me. But it's so damn cute. They feel so like, yeah, I got you, Dad. I'm like, yeah, you did. You got me good. So cute. Okay, besides the point, we're here. I'm broken. I have no idea. If I ever had a direction of what to say after we do the introduction, it's gone now because up high, down low, too slow has just taken over my brain. So we are just going to, I don't know. Let's, hey, Daddy, how you doing?
What's up, buddy? How you doing, Outhouse?
I'm all right. Okay, well, you are here. You are a guest. You are, I don't know, man. Like, I guess you're here. Like, you're like a make a wish. Like, I want to be on Trade Addicts. And I'm just like, okay, fine. Yeah, sure. I don't really want him here, but he's here. So we're going to live with it. We're going to deal with it. We're going to power through, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I appreciate the charity. It is fishbowl time. So you doing me a solid and letting me come on this podcast, you know, this will make my career. My mom has been crying all day hearing that I'm coming on here. She had said this is going to be it for you. You are going to be the person who disappoints people after Tom Everett Scott, and you're going to take down what's been a fairly established podcast by embarrassing yourself and your friends on live, or if you're on the Patreon, or recorded afterwards if you're not podcasting. So this is big for me, and I apologize ahead of time for all the fans you're going to lose just having me on your show.
Can we talk about how, even if it's bad, how spectacularly bad you would have to be for that to actually happen? Like, it would be impressive, impressively bad, but still to be that bad that it would just like trash you and lose all of our listeners. Like, that's still like shooting high, right?
Yeah, that's been my stated goal for a while, is that basically I got to this many followers super quick, and I'm trying to see if I can get back down the other side of the hill just as fast. Like, so that's been my goal in every podcast. I've stated it out there, and it still hasn't happened yet, but I'm guessing it will happen at some point. I'm not sure how. I have literally went from a fantasy football account to a sandwich account, and yet still ticking upwards, which is spectacular in so many different ways. Just on a joke that people were talking about their brand. And I said, well, you can make anything a brand just by saying it enough. And I chose sandwiches, and here we are. People have changed their, you know, little logo to sandwiches. I am getting sandwich questions all the time. it is amazing what you can do with social media if you decide, rather than taking it seriously like 99% of the people do and eventually give themselves heart attacks, if you make a mockery of it, you can have equally as successful of a time on there, but have a lot more fun doing it. And that's really amazed me, because I thought that was going to be the start of my descent down the hill. And,
oh, no.
And yet here we are.
That's what's going to make you skyrocket, I'm telling you. I know you're new to like the community and all, but I don't know how long you've been on Twitter. Matt Harmon of, well, once NFL, now Yahoo fame. You know, he invented reception perception. He has a thing. That's his brand. But he just started talking about Brussels sprouts a lot lately because, you know, he lost a lot of weight and he loves Brussels sprouts, and there's so many ways to cook them. And I do legitimately like Brussels sprouts also. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, like, they are a good thing. It's not like it's just something he likes. But then all of a sudden, that's all people started talking to him about. Like, people were just tweeting him pictures of their Brussels sprouts that they cooked. They were giving him recipes. Like, he would guest on pods, and they would talk more about Brussels sprouts than they would reception perception. And at one point, he's just like, all right, I think we're done with this now. It was fun. It's been like a year and a half. There's more to my life than Brussels sprouts. We're talking about fantasy football again.
I'm not sure I'll pivot back, but it's nice to know that there's a precedent set that I could eventually go back if I wanted to. But for right now, I'm living that sandwich life. I'm really enjoying it. I have, you know, sandwich buddies, if you will. Mike Stoyanov from Blossom and Billionaires is my partner in crime now in raising sandwich awareness. He and I talk basically daily at this point about sandwiches. So yeah, I am fully ingrained in being a sandwich account
now. Raising sandwich awareness. I love it.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do.
Maybe at some point you could pivot from sandwiches to fill the Brussels sprout void.
And now that I know that it exists, one of my best, I guess, numbers tweets, if you will, was about asparagus. So it's not a far pivot over to Brussels sprouts. I'm already in the produce section. So I don't think that would be a difficult thing to do. And somehow, if I could find a sandwich that encompasses Brussels sprouts, we might be able to crossover episode.
Brussels sprout slaw, man. That goes right on top of a sandwich for a nice crunchy aspect.
I like it. I like it. Anything that gives a little crunch other than chips, because, you know, we're not children, I think is valid. So I'm down.
Let's take a step back. Let's not bad talk chips on a sandwich.
Chips with the sandwich is fine. On the sandwich, what kind of sandwich did you make that chips up the game?
I mean, it's going to have to be a plain, boring, you know, ham and cheese. I mean, chips up a ham and cheese sandwich.
It does, if it's not great ham, but I think you should treat yourself better. I think.
Oh, no, 100%. Yes, I'm talking like my mom made me this for my middle school lunch. Yeah, I'm throwing the chips on the sandwich.
Exactly, and that's what I'm giving you. I think really I'll give you an over-under of like age 14 before you've gone too far, and now you should start just making yourself a halfway decent sandwich. But we have a lot of time to talk about kind of the sandwiches, because, you know, I love them, but I just think realistically, you know, that would be a whole episode. And you gave me the show sheet, which only includes a few comments about sandwiches. So it seems like you guys might want to steer the show somewhere else, and it's yours. So I don't want it's up to you. I mean, it's up to
no,
you.
We no.
can go into let's, different types of sandwiches.
Let's talk about fantasy football. You know what? Fine. We're going to talk about fantasy. You know what?
Okay.
How long have you been playing fantasy football?
How long have I been playing fantasy football? What's funny is you see this baby face, because I have it, you know, not a lot of wrinkles and stuff. I have been playing fantasy football since 1986.
Dude. Were you like two?
Yeah, I was in Little League, and my dad had found a league, a bunch of his buddies, they had used the newspaper as their official scorer and mailed out all of the matchups. So you found out like on Thursday whether you won. And they would all get like a cooler beer and go over to my dad's friend's house. So I brought my juice boxes and started drafting, starting with Jerry Rice and Steve Young, the year that Joe Montana got hurt, and then eventually rolling through what were some painful years. We were drafting quarterbacks. Everything was touchdowns only. Then we eventually rolled into touchdowns plus 100 yards. So basically your matchup would be determined whether you got 99 or 100 yards a lot of times. So it was like a zero, all or nothing thing that we would go with. We would add 9 points if you got a touchdown that was over 40 yards for a wide receiver, or 20 yards for a running back. all sorts of fun happened. And the line back then, before the rules changed, was 240 yards for a quarterback was your bonus, 100 for a running back and 100 for a wide receiver. And we didn't play tight ends. We played pass catchers. So really, you never, ever drafted a tight end in that league. If you did, it was like Tony Gonzalez in the last round. But it was wild because it was so much different than you have now, because even playing one QB, you did draft like a super flex league because quarterbacks were so valuable because our scoring system was horrific at best. But I played in that league for, dang near 17 years, I want to say, and then rolled into kind of getting my friends involved in what now has become more of a dynasty obsession with a side of redraft, kind of like the chips next to a sandwich. I now do like a side of redraft, but the meal is mostly dynasty.
Well, how long have you been playing dynasty? When did that turn into the more mature sandwich where you don't need the chips on there into dynasty?
So I've been playing dynasty for quite a while now. So I've been playing, 2005 was my first year. I can always date when my first dynasty league started, because my first ever rookie pick had paid off dividends for quite a long time because it was Mr. Frank Gore. And you would think, hey, that must have been great to have your first rookie pick be Frank Gore. And if my first two startup picks weren't Rudy Johnson and Marion Barber, it probably would have been. But Frank Gore just basically filled the void of my mistakes. But yeah, we started 2005, one QB league. We thought it would be cool to try IDP, and the IDP we play is borderline laughable, where no defensive player scores more than 3 points. Similar one quarterback league. And 2005 to now, that league has had the turnover of, I want to say, 3 or 4 league members have left, but we're still going strong. I actually have my rookie draft for that league in 2 weeks. So,
wow. Okay, that broke my brain for a second. And it's so weird that you brought up Marion Barber. Someone posted like highlights of Marion Barber on Twitter like a few days ago. I forgot how much fun it was to watch that man play. He was like angry at people. Mm-hmm. Like, he was like the only running back I really remember that just like tried to hit defenders. Like, you know, there was no elusiveness whatsoever. It's like, oh, there's a guy, I'm gonna hit that guy. You know, whether it was good for the run or not, he didn't care. He just wanted to contact people. And, you know, it was probably bad for his head. You know, there was probably many concussions, but still, just as a, at least back then, very naive younger football fan, it was insanely fun to watch.
So here's my definition of analysis, because you know me, I tend to go deep in statistics and correlation. What I found is that running backs named Marion tend to not avoid contact. And what I will give you is Marion Barber and Marion Butts as the only two Marions I'm actually aware of that have played football. And both of them literally avoided zero tackles their entire career. Like, there was no elusiveness. It was just, I'm going to run through whatever's in front of me and either break free or not. Barber tend to be a little more successful than Butts, but both of them have that battering ram, Craig Ironhead Hayward style of run, which was basically, my legs are going to be churning in that direction, and if you step in front of me, we'll see who wins. And it was like an Oklahoma drill every time they touched the ball, and it was spectacular to watch.
Yeah, I think that's analytics right there.
I think so. That's what they tell me. Yeah.
I will say, you have double the Marion knowledge that I have.
That's why I'm here. I want to make sure I add to the Marion talk more. It's Marion and sandwiches is kind of what I do.
We don't talk enough Marions on this show.
It's hard to, but if you find the two, you could get a lot of talk about them.
Hey, I could do this right now, because we could just segue this into Maid Marion and talk about my favorite Disney movie, which is Robin Hood. And Odalali, what a day. I mean, come on, guys.
Spectacular. I still don't believe that they didn't know it was him dressed as a bird. I mean, it was quite obviously Robin Hood with a couple like flappy things on his face. And yet still they let him do the archery.
Brilliant contest. Disguise. What are you talking about? That was straight up a stork, man. Like,
no way he was a stork. That was a fox with some flappy things on his face.
There was absolutely just like two cone-shaped cups tied to his face. Yes, whatever, man. Back off. It was a long time ago. They, you know. People were very much more trusting back then. Okay, so man, you've been playing Dynasty for as long as I've been playing fantasy football. What are some of the best and worst trades you could remember making in the lifetime of Dynasty you've been playing?
All right. So my best trade was very obvious. It was trading Maurice Jones-Drew for Le'Veon Bell and Michael Crabtree. Maurice Jones-Drew had come off of a running back one season, and I believe he had 400 yards for the rest of his career.
Oh.
And then obviously you had Le'Veon Bell and Michael Crabtree doing what they did for years to come. Granted, it fell off, but I am a trader. So, you know, they were gone off my team before they fell apart. But Maurice Jones-Drew, when you look at his statistics over the course of his career, he fell off like crazy. And if you remember, Le'Veon Bell, so this was in 2012, Maurice Jones-Drew went from 1,600 yards to 414 yards. It was a good time to get out. And if you remember, Le'Veon Bell had a foot problem his rookie year. He looked slow. Yep. He looked a little bit overweight. So picking him up his rookie year, my actual target was Crabtree, and yet somehow fell into free Le'Veon Bell as well. And I thought, I truly thought that that would never, ever be topped. I was like, you can't. How can you possibly top that trade? And then what happened was, coming off a championship, I made an extremely bold move in 2018. He had carried me to a championship. His week 14 through 16 was historic. I think he had 40 points every week. And I decided to trade Todd Gurley.
Ooh.
And what I traded Todd Gurley for, coming off of the 2018 season.
Does it even matter?
I know.
At that point, exactly, it doesn't. But what happened was, it became three future first-round picks.
Oof.
And I'll bet you thinking, hey, what do those picks turn into? Well, when you trade two of them, Travis Kelce, and use the third one on Jonathan Taylor, you regroup your team awfully quick. Same draft with Jonathan Taylor, I traded Melvin Gordon straight up for the 208, a man named Antonio Gibson, and all of a sudden, I'm right back into another dynasty roster. So flipped that team that I had that won the championship in 2018, was thinking, hey, this is probably getting a little older, and rebuilt that basically on the spot, just with flipping Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon, coming out with Antonio Gibson, Jonathan Taylor, and Travis Kelce. So I was feeling pretty good about those trades.
I think we have the wrong hosts of this show.
I know.
Rocky. I mean, holy crap. Because I need to talk about my Le'Veon Bell trade when you brought up his rookie year. I was not as tuned in to, you know, everything football as I am now. So I'm watching Lev Bell play, and all I really see is this sluggish volume based guy. Mm-hmm. I know he had his foot was hurt in the beginning of the year, but had I known now, I would know it takes almost a full year to recover from foot injuries. Did not really think that back then. So I'm like, all right, screw this guy. He was a keeper league. So I'm like, all right, you know what? I'm going to trade him in the next year's startup draft because he's just a volume based guy. You know who's getting a lot of hype? Toby freaking Gerhart, baby.
Oh boy.
I traded sophomore Lev Bell for Toby Gerhart. Lev Bell turned into Lev Bell that year. And I mean, Toby Gerhart played in the NFL that year.
Straight up.
He did. He did play. He did.
Yes. Technically, it was just Lev Bell for a fourth round startup pick. But yes, that's. Okay. And with every team keeping two players, you know, that pushes stuff down. But yeah, no, I absolutely at the time thought I was being clever in trading the volume back Lev Bell for new stud Jaguars running back Toby Gerhart.
I fell to the Gerhart trap. So I'm not even going to make fun of you for this, because I fell into that full steam. I'm like, Gerhart's going to be the guy. He's going to get that volume. I didn't give up Lev Bell for him, but I did buy into him. So being there at the time, it wasn't as dumb then as it sounds now. It wasn't a great trade, but I've heard dumber. It's just bad luck, I think, in the end. And we all kind of bought into Gerhart for a hot second, I think.
I'm sure I've made dumber.
We all have. Is that what we're doing? We're doing dumb trades?
I mean, look at it this way. We were just a couple of years off on white Stanford running backs. That's the way I'm looking at it.
Very close. So I will tell you, let me make you feel better, because, you know, whenever we celebrate trades, we should also make sure that people realize that.
Oh, my next question. Yes. Yeah, so what are some of your bad trades? Let's do it.
Oh, okay, cool. So there was this guy that came out in 2016, and for me, gadget players just aren't enjoyable to have. Like, I don't want guys that they have to manufacture touches. And I feel like I'm really good at drafting, so even a third round pick has some value more than a gadget player who probably won't see the field. So when I got a third round pick for Tyreek Hill his rookie year, I was feeling pretty good about myself, because I'm like, what will this guy ever do in the NFL? I mean, it's not going to be sustainable. Maybe he breaks a punt or two, but he's not going to be a player. So that was a very easy move for me. That was a great one. But then going back to trading two first round picks and talking about how I made such a great move to trade two first round picks, the year that I did it to fleece my league mate for Mr. Corey Coleman, that one was spectacular as well.
I know that feeling.
It was good, but what I did was I parlayed it even further by taking the other two picks. And this is why you should never give me picks in advance. It's like giving a kid an advance on his allowance and expect him to have it 2 weeks later. I took my other two first round picks and grabbed Zach Stacy. So, those four first round picks for Zach Stacy and Corey Coleman really set me up well to draft first for the next couple of years. So at least
That's
I
a
had that
good
going
strategy,
forward.
man. Look at that. Always think playing chess while everyone's playing checkers.
Yeah, unfortunately, other people who got the picks were drafting first, but at least I got the first pick in the second round. So, that was cool.
I was so into Corey Coleman and I think Josh Dotson was
Josh
the same
Doctson.
draft. I loved both of those guys.
So many shares of those two. Those were. All right, we're not going to talk about that. Okay. So what's a guiding principle you take with you, whether you are offering or evaluating trades?
I am a talker. I'm very much like I will send an offer, but once we start playing ping pong, there's always frustration. So I get down to brass tacks and just say, hey, let's talk it through. But for me, it's always trying to figure out how I can ensure future business. I'm never trying to win the battle. I'm always thinking the war. So what I don't want to do is completely take advantage of somebody where I feel like they just won't come back. So I'm always trying to make a deal that I could see making from both sides. I never send those, I hope somebody drunkenly hits accept offers. Because once you send that, now all of a sudden you sketch me out, and now I'm going to analyze everything you do and try to figure out what your angle is. So I try to be that welcome person, and my phone's always available. So even people in my league will call me about trades they're thinking of making with other people or in their other leagues. Hugely valuable, because now I know what you like, what you don't like. I'm figuring out your tendencies, I'm figuring out your valuations. So while I'm giving you advice, I'm also helping myself. So basically, for me, it's always be open for business, always be available to give advice, and make sure you don't try to fleece people. Make sure you don't try to be that person who's trying to win every trade, because eventually that'll catch up with you. And once it does, you're done trading in that league. You might as well just go home.
Damn. Yeah. I good. That is a very good answer to that question. Good. Yeah. I got nothing. But what I do have is what I got derailed and forgot to really say in the first place. Hey, why don't you tell everyone who you are, what you do, and where they could find what you do?
Oh, I thought people knew me. I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm Mike. I am at Daddy's Home FF. Anyone's watching the video, it's over here.
Patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod.
Make sure you do that. You're paying to be able to see my handles. You don't have to
Yep.
spell it. So you find me at Daddy's Home FF, spending way too much time and making way too many jokes on Twitter. I write loosely for the Aging Cooler, which is Sal Pal's blog with Sal, CD Carter, and Cooter Doodle. I have my most recent thing is coming out. I think I hit publish a few minutes ago, but you'll hear about it tomorrow. And I have a new podcast scheduled to be launched at the end of this month. I have a man by the name of Dynasty Outhouse, who I understand is going to be guest number one. Going to be a completely unhinged, unscripted, wild interview show where we're going to talk about any and everything, probably a little more about Robin Hood, as I understand it, most likely about sandwiches. So you'll be able to catch Hanging with Daddy end of this month. This is actually the first time I've done the announcement, but I figure since you and I were working on it, now's as good a time as any. So yeah, Agent Cooler, Twitter, and eventually by end of this month, Hanging with Daddy's podcast will be live. That's where you can find me.
And I also got a sneak peek of the opening, the intro. Fire!
Right. Shout out to Gabe, man, taking care of the intro. It is unbelievable.
Like at one point, like you need to be like you know, one of our patrons watching this video to watch my reaction. Like I really just went like, like threw myself back, hands over my chest, went like, oh yes, that's what Gabe does. Like that's how, yeah, that's that intro. Like it's.
Oh, it's perfect. It's perfect, man.
And I'm sure you made Russ's day, Mike, because he wants to be the first guest on everyone's pod.
Oh,
ever.
I told him 100% tips on first guest. Absolutely. Like he, you know, he knows. Like I, it is that, that's my thing. I, especially if you talk to me about your show before you get it started, dibs on first guest, man.
Yep. No, you have first guest. I think Cooter's, Cooter Doodle is guest two, Troy King guest three. And then I'll be reaching out to some of my other friends, but I'm hoping to do, I don't know. It's going to be very, as you know, unscripted, unscheduled on everything. I will do the podcast when I feel like it. I'll launch it when I'm ready. And you will hear it when I decide it's available. So don't be looking for any kind of schedule with this. But no, really, and Russ, I know you and I kicked around the idea, but I mean, having this idea, and so many people come up to me before saying, I wish I could be a fly on the wall to just hear how you and your friends talk.
Yep.
You know, we've done a lot of stuff. There's been times where we've had internet problems. You and I shared stories similar with Ray G, where, you know, you have internet problems, you lose a host, and you're just chopping it up. You know, you're talking about different things, giving people a look kind of behind the scenes. I think we all have this idea of what people are from Twitter. We all have this idea of how people are going to be from their articles and from their podcasts, but becoming friends with so many people in the industry and seeing how they actually are and hearing about things maybe you won't see in articles and podcasts, I think a lot of people find fascinating. So it's not going to be fantasy football advice. It's not going to be waivers. It's not going to be start sits. Man, that's saturated. What it's going to be is, hey, if you were sitting next to me and my buddy at a bar, here's what would happen. And maybe some football leaks in, maybe it doesn't. Maybe we talk about art. Maybe we talk about Disney movies. It really doesn't matter. It's just going to be a conversation that will start when it starts and end when it ends.
And well, I guess if you do have Cooter Doodle as your second guest, you should pull a her and just say it's the first episode anyway.
Yep. I think maybe we could do that. We could make her the first one and then start counting from there. But yeah, no, we're going to try to get as many people on as we can. And, you know, I'll be out recruiting, obviously, in early August, as you know. You do owe me a hug when I get there. That was the promise that got me on a plane. So
the second, you just always be ready, always like have a firm grasp on gravity, because if I find you and you don't see me, I will leave the ground to jump and hug when I see you.
No, that's fair. I've been training for literally anything, so I'm good to go. I'll be head on a swivel, ready to go, and if you take me down, that's fine too. We'll make it weird and we'll hug on the ground, and I'm cool with that.
Oh, it wouldn't be weird at all. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time I've done that. Moving on. Awesome. But just real quick, like that is the, like what you're, I know you were kind of joking, but also a little serious about, like, you know, if I feel like doing it, I'm going to do it. I'm going to, you know, no, like that is, there's such a freedom about having a, your own show, which is a terrifying, B, there's some freedom in it, but like not having time sensitive material is great. Like you like really can put it out whenever the hell you want. You could record six in a 1 week and then not do anything for a month or two. Like it's just like, it's, yeah, I'm a little jealous, I'm not gonna lie, even though I love sitting and talking with Rocky once a week. Every once in a while it might be nice to be like, oh, I'm taking a week or two off, screw this, I don't feel like talking to anybody, oh my god, I'm so tired of talking. But no, I never get tired of talking. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I did the weekly last year. I had the Wednesday show and it was great, but I'm putting together deep waiver sleepers. I'm putting together who's going to smash their current rankings on ESPN. Man, that's tedious. Like, yes. I love doing it, but I'm trying to bet against experts. Like the show that we had was legitimately, who were your league mates too stupid to pick up? Go grab them.
Yep.
And then who did ESPN get wrong? That's tough. I mean, that's a big swing to be taking every week and then having to basically own it the next week. So I was putting in what was really an hour and a half show. I don't know that how many people realize this. I was putting in 10 to 12 hours to get that ready, checking matchups, bringing stats that, you know, I had to convince you, no, don't start the guy that ESPN has ranked number 8, start the guy he has ranked number 20. And I'll tell you, my hit rate was pretty good, but the ROI was pretty low considering that I was starting basically Sunday morning for Wednesday's show.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out the matchups, who's getting hurt, what are these things, because you're betting against people who are doing, you know, as much research as you are. Like, I'm trying to beat Matthew Berry, Tristan Cockrift, Field Yates, you know, guys who have been doing this for how long? And I'm basically telling you their rankings are wrong. They missed on this guy. That was tough. And having it ready for a set time, regardless of what's happening with my family, with my kids, just being like, hey, I got to be on camera. It was taxing. And as much as I loved it and as much as I love Chase giving me my shot at it, I had told my family, I had told everybody that this was something I'm doing for fun. And once it became taxing, I was like, hey, I made a promise. I'm going to honor that promise. And now it becomes, when y'all go to bed, I am going to DM my friend saying, let's do it. I'm going to hit record and off we go, as opposed to the audience is there. Everyone's waiting.
Yeah. This dude, is just that easy. Grind sounds exhausting with you just talking about it.
Yeah. And it was a blast. And like I said, it gave me a shot. So I don't want to seem like I regret it in any way. Yeah. Like, I loved doing it, but a year of it was a lot. And that's why, I mean, I've turned down different websites, because I'm like, you don't want me. I write when the mood hits. I'm not a writer. I'm a talker. So every once in a while, I think I've published 4 things in what, the 18 months we've known each other. I think I've put out 4 things, and that's good enough for me, but not really for a website who's looking for clicks and things like that. So while it's cost me some opportunities, I wouldn't change anything. Like, I'm just pretty happy now, you know, putting things on Sal's blog when I feel like it, you know, popping off the show when I want, hopping on Twitter when I'm bored. It is very freeing to make that change.
All right. Well, since you do things to make you happy and we want to keep you happy since you're our guest, which do you want to do first? Do you want to do some Trade Addicts trades or you want to do listener questions?
Let's do some Trade Addicts trades, because what I want to do is all the people that submitted you questions, I want them to have to listen to the end. So let's make them wait.
Smart man. Look how good this guy is. Man, seriously, we may have to switch seats at some point. Like, this might be your show and I might start interviewing people. I'm not sure. Damn, he's good. Okay, so Trade Addicts leagues are 12-team Superflex, PPR, tight end premium, which 1.75 points per tight end premium, per tight end reception, almost did it, with 0.05 points for return yardage because there are no TA1 trades. We had a one-week blip, and that was it. So, man, like, we have, like, officially hit peak dead period, man. Like, We had to squeak out 3 trades just to talk about, and we had like none coming into today. Like, we wrapped up our Scott Fishbowl teams, and now we're just like, cool. And I know there's like 5 people listening, like, oh, my draft is still going. That sucks, man. Like, that's too long. I get wanting to savor your Scott Fishbowl draft, but we're going past 2 weeks now. That's too long for a draft. Let's just, that means too many people are timing out. Like, yeah. That's all that is. That's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it gets to the point. And I'm definitely one of those savor it. Like, I didn't want to be the first league done.
Yeah.
But yeah, 2 weeks. We had already booked other drafts for this week, figuring we'd be done. So anyone who's trying to do both, I feel bad for them.
Oh, real quick, before we do get into the TA trades, you're in the Fishbowl. So what division are you in? And how do you feel about your team? Why don't you give us some highlights of who you drafted?
Yeah, sure. So I am in the Beastie Boys division. I had started in the 105, and I had done my build very similar to what I would do with the redraft build. So I went mostly 0 wide receiver at the beginning. So what I started out with was Travis Kelce at 105. I think he's the biggest difference maker you're going to find in this league. So getting my 102 at 105 was spectacular. followed it up with Aaron Rodgers. No guts, no glory. If he plays, that's a steal. If he doesn't, well, I'm trying to win a big tournament. So it's better than going with someone basic. Then rolled out Antonio Gibson, DeAndre Swift, Javonte Williams, and Zach Moss at the running back position, paired Rodgers with Cousins of Roethlisberger, and then rocked Deontay Johnson, Tyler Lockett, Deebo Samuel, and Tyler Boyd at wide receiver. So went pretty strong there. And then what I did for my second half, I guess lessons learned, because as we talked about in the pre-show, last year was my first year. Instead of taking bye week fill-ins, I went very heavy upside with Mac Jones, Jordan Love, Kenneth Gainwell, Elijah Mitchell, Paris Campbell, Nico Collins, Amari Rodgers, Gerald Everett, and Donald Parham. So basically, I took guys that may end up in the waiver wire, but what I was looking for was who are guys that could crack my starting lineup, not who am I going to play week 12, who are guys that could crack the starting lineup. And then, of course, took Tyler Bass because they allowed kickers. I love the Bills. I love Tyler Bass, you know, easy pick. So I love the team. I think it's a strong team. Do I think it's going to win? Of course not. I mean, there's 1,900 players in the league, but I think it'll compete. And, you know, I think with the projection that came out, I was projected to win the division. That'd be super cool if that happened. But I'll tell you, for me, I've already won. I've had a blast doing it this year. I've had so much fun. So I'm cool with any outcome at this point. I'm just very much happy to be there, guy.
My goal is always just top half. That's all I want. Top half, just to sort of make it look like I know what I'm doing. That's my goal. And 2 years ago, I came very close not to making that. Very, very, very. I was within like 100 of being bottom half, and whew, I still made my goal. That's all that matters. Yeah,
that's it.
Everything but Gerald Everett, man. Seahawks tight ends. Just, it's never going to be a thing.
Oh, I love the Gerald Everett pick.
It's never, I'm sorry, just Seahawks tight ends are never going to be a thing.
And maybe he won't. I mean, and luckily I have somebody above him that I feel pretty good about.
Oh, yeah, you picked that your entire second half of the draft. I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, and that was one where it was, I really did. Getting Kelce was a benefit to me. Like, what I couldn't understand was people that were getting these high-end tight ends, and then we're getting their tight end too, like in that weird little mid dead spot stuff. To me, the benefit of having and drafting a Travis Kelce was I could just not care about the position after.
Don't
that,
waste, you know? Hunter Henry or, you know, all of those like Janus, all those middle guys. Just take your big way to the end. Actually, last year I went Travis Kelce and, man, who was my second? I went tight end, you know, in the first two picks. I missed the playoffs by 2 points last year, but you know, that was also because I just threw the rest of my team was pretty shitty. Last year I couldn't get away from being myself. So I drafted too many wide receivers when clearly in a redraft format, you don't need to do that early on. And I did that different this year. I went a lot of quarterbacks, running backs. I kept missing on the tight ends I wanted. So I waited far too long, but again, besides the point. Yeah, I love the upside of almost every player you took in that second half. But we're going to get to the trade addicts trades now because that's what we're going towards.
Let's do it.
Whew. Okay, well, let's get the small ones out of the way first. Also, because they are about tight ends and we were just sitting here talking about tight ends. So let's go start from the bottom and go up. We have trade addict 7 where someone traded a second and a fifth for Tyler Higbee. Okay, so let me just straight up call this out. Right before this got accepted, this same person sent me 2 seconds for Dallas Goedert, and I hit the reject button very, very fast.
Smart.
Because, well, first of all, my team is terrible, and there, you know, seconds, whatever, man. Like, I'm not going to sell a player that's young and good unless I'm getting a first or something better back. It's better to wait and, like, I am terrible at being patient unless my team is trash and I'm really rebuilding. In that case, I will effing wait until the right moment, you know, but if like my team's good, screw it. No, gotta go. Or if I'm just being an idiot about it, but this team I've been taking very, like, I think the reason I'm taking this team carefully is because I actually earned and kept the 101. So I have Trevor Lawrence on my team. Nice. Now, like, I can't screw that up. I got to do this right.
Love it.
But back to this trade. You know, the reason I wanted to talk about the player a little bit, what are your thoughts on Tyler Higbee, Mike? And do you think he's, I guess, a second is a flyer at this point, especially in a draft coming next year that isn't supposed to be as deep as the one we're in right now. Is Higbee a guy you would take a flyer on?
No. No, I'm not really a Higbee guy. And I think, you know, everyone's been looking at him to be bigger now with Gerald Everett out of the picture, but so is Jared Goff. Now we're going to Matthew Stafford. They still have very established wide receivers. Obviously, they have now a strong running game with the 1-2 punch, as much as people don't want to admit it. So 1-2 punch at 100% is...
You're with people that do.
Yeah, good, good. Yes. I like being in the safe space.
I called Akers the most overrated asset in fantasy. So
absolutely, 100%. So for me, I think Higbee is just another one of those guys in that tight end zone we were just referencing. He's a guy where if he scores, great. His big games were predictable. They were against teams that struggle against the tight end. I mean, he took advantage of matchups, and great for him. He also did it when Everett was hurt, so congratulations. But things are considerably different now. I'm not a fan of the player. So when you take the ambiguity of a new quarterback and you take a player I'm not a fan of, that's just two question marks that I don't really want to buy into. So for me, when I look at a second, and if you take a look at it this year, for example, when I could, in a tight end premium league like you referenced, I could take a shot on a Hunter Long. If it's a late second, I could take a shot on a Brevin Jordan if I chose to do so. And what I always say is I'd rather take a player that might not suck rather than trading for a player I know sucks. Like, if you've already shown me what you are, I will take the unknown, because really you're playing with house money at that point. And to me, Higbee, I know a lot of people that are smarter than me are high on him. So I am very prepared to be wrong, as I am with every take. But Higbee is on zero of my rosters, and that won't change.
I'm kind of with Mike on this. I mean, I think value-wise, it's fine. I think, you know, a second and a fifth for Higbee. I don't think you're giving up a ton, but I kind of agree with Mike that I don't know necessarily you're getting that much back either. I mean, I'd rather probably – I'm not a huge fan of Higbee either. He had that one spurt, and other than that, he's pretty much done almost nothing. So I'd rather pay something cheaper for, say, a Troutman or a Gerald Everett, for that matter, rather than pay a second and a fifth for Higbee. So I'm pretty much agreeing with Mike here, though. I think that's fair value. I mean, I think you have to give up a second for Higbee, but I'd rather try and get someone cheaper that may produce just as well. I mean, every tight end after tight end, about five or six, is the same guy anyway. So,
yeah. So here's, like, I saw this and I thought about it, and Higbee, I think the only reason he ever had a chance of being a thing was he came in an insanely weak tight end class. It was like him and Hunter Henry, right? Like, there was one other person I can't remember anymore, but like everyone had the last name starting with H, and that's the only reason I remember it. It may have honestly been Austin Hooper.
Sounds right.
So, and yeah, but like, I'm sitting here staring at a second for Tyler Higbee, and well, I agree with everything you guys said. I was never the biggest fan of the player. It took a lot for him to, you know, to do well. I would probably, if I didn't have a guy I felt comfortable starting, like if I only had Mike Gesicki, who I love, but he hasn't necessarily proven that he's going to be an every week starter, or honestly, even maybe Dallas Goedert, because it's the same kind of thing. When he's good, but he hasn't done it for a season. I might throw what if I think is going to be a late second for random dudes in that 8 to 24 range, which are all the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, would I love to tell myself, yeah, I'll hold that second and draft Pat Freiermuth? Yeah, I would love to tell myself that. I'm not holding on to second round picks, man. You know, like, they are, like, the only thing that will stop me is, can I do something better with this second? Chances are the answer is going to be yes, but I don't hate it. I don't hate the move. And I'm glad this happened after me just very quickly rejecting the offer that came my way. Like, I'm glad I rejected mine so he can get this done.
Yeah, and in your trade, I think, is an absolute reject. I mean, you have a guy who has a ceiling. I think we're all still under the impression that Ertz is moving on. So
I have heard, as of today, Ertz is still on the Eagles.
I've seen a few tweets like that, and your retweet of those few tweets or snapshot.
To many an Eagles fan's dismay, by the way.
Yeah.
Hey, wait. Stand up a second.
Stand up.
Oh, what are we doing? We doing Brands?
No, Rocky, stand up for a second. Oh. What are you wearing?
Oh, no.
No, I do love Zach Ertz. We don't need him on the team anymore.
Right now.
He won us a Super Bowl. I love him, but it's time to go.
Let's be honest. It's kind of been time to go for a while now. It's just they kept restructuring. And, you know, they have a thing of letting their older tight ends go to let the newer guys take over. It was the same thing with... I can always get the wrong one. Brent Celek.
Brent Celek, yeah.
I always go to say Garrett, but, you know, I think he was an offensive lineman maybe. Same thing with Brent Celek. We're like, oh, my God, just let Ertz play. Let Ertz play. Why are you still playing Celek? I get it. He can block. Who cares? And, of course, there's real football reasons for that. But now it's just ridiculous. Let Goddard go do his thing, and it seems like it's going to happen. But also, another reason I wanted to talk about that last trade is to talk about this trade. And like I told Mike before, like I put this on here as more of a – you know, don't do what I do because, you know, do as I say, not as I do, because I do a lot of stupid things. Mm-hmm. This next trade is Trade Addicts 5, where I traded away Anthony Firkser for Amari Rodgers. Now, on the surface, you will say the exact same thing like I did when I accepted this trade. Yeah, whatever. Okay, sure. Why not? But the truth is, know your league settings, and a guy who has actually had spurts of doing well. When Janu was out, Anthony Firkser did pretty decently well. And I know bringing in Julio instead of Corey Davis might push more away from Firkser, but still, we have seen him put up a 20-point game or close in the NFL. Amari Rodgers, we have not. I think we're, what, forever chasing the wide receiver two in Green Bay? But the smart move in a league like the Trade Addicts trades is... I mean, Amari Rodgers was, what, a third or a fourth round rookie pick? Like, getting all of those super low tight ends, because the second they come close to hitting in a 0.75 premium, they're worth a first. Like, the second they have two games, like, Irv Smith is worth a first and a half, even though he has done nothing yet. But it doesn't matter. He's Irv frickin' Smith.
I don't think Firkser's ever going to get to the point where he's worth a first.
You don't know
I
that.
I don't care what he does. Unless he has, like, 6 weeks...
Halfway through this season, if he's a top 10 tight end, he's worth a first.
Sure.
And we know that is completely doable with how bad tight ends get after five.
But let's look at the positive, though, right? If Firkser gets off to a slow start and there's some buzz around Amari Rodgers taking that second spot, Rodgers comes back. One of the things that I like is grabbing guys now. It's July, right? I like grabbing guys now that have the potential for camp buzz. Anthony Firkser is not going to get camp buzz. You know what he is. You know who he is. But Amari Rodgers, you best believe you're going to be seeing pictures of him making one-handed catches and warm-ups and things like that. So what I'm a firm believer of is that if I can pick up a guy in July who's going to get camp buzz, even if I don't believe in him, I'm good with that because that is growing my asset.
Oh, I mean, that's totally what I was thinking when I did this trade.
Yeah. It's a good move. And then once you do that, you just move him before he proves everybody right that he isn't anything. So your goal is, again, to move him by week one. But one of the things that I like doing around this time is trying to predict who Twitter is going to latch onto, because you know they do. And honestly,
if you can just, baby.
Oh, absolutely. And if you can slip Ray G like a 20 spot to talk up Amari Rodgers, all of Twitter will, without actually knowing who he is or what he does, possibly not even knowing where he plays. Because what will happen is then someone else will take that take and just change a couple words and they'll send it out. And then someone will retweet that. It's like the telephone game. And then all of a sudden, Amari Rodgers is Amari Cooper and you got yourself a steal. So when you look at it that way, I do think that if you're on the fence about a trade, getting a guy the team is going to hype is smarter than getting a camp body that everybody knows who he is, which is what Ferkser is going to have the same value September 1st that he has now. Amari Rodgers might not. So as much as I'm with you on the scoring system, I do think you might be able to move up from what's now what tight end 17 and Ferkser, for example, to that tight end 12, maybe getting yourself, maybe flipping Rodgers for like a Cole Kmet type player, who I like, you know, considerably more than Ferkser. So if you can somehow take this lottery ticket that you got and get to the point where it looks like it might cash out, like before that last lottery ball hits and you find out, you only won $2. You know, if you can time it right, this could work out for you. If you're stuck, if it's musical chairs and you're stuck with Amari Rodgers, yeah, you messed up. But you got a month and a half to fix that. And I think you can.
He definitely can.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'm going to say a few things. First of all, holy shit. Like, I'm going to step back and you're hosting the show from now on because, goddamn, man. Two... Did I start with A or one? I always screw that up. Whatever. I'm just going to move on. And it's really funny because you said, you know, Amari Rodgers and turning into Amari Cooper. And it's really funny because I went, that's funny because Ray G also turned Jalen Reagor into Jerry Rice. And I was going to play that, you know, little game with the first letters and like, oh man, you just pulled that first name. Good move, man.
Oh.
And I forgot what else I was going to say because I was like building myself way too much to make those first two jokes and it's gone now. But no, man, I love that. That makes me feel a lot better about everything. And now I absolutely just eyed who owns Cole Kmet in that league to see if I can pull that off in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, make sure you do before you launch this podcast. That would be super awkward if you didn't, just in case they listen. I don't know if they do. I don't know how many clicks you get, but it's possible.
I mean, let's face it, like a third of our listeners are on the show right now. So
that's true. That makes sense. Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our only real trade, which is a little bit of a big boy trade. Mm-hmm. There's big names in it. TA4, hold on, let me scratch. Okay, there we go. TA4, we have Baker Mayfield, Stefon Diggs, and a 22 second for Tua and Justin Jefferson.
Yeah, so when you sent me this, I stared at this thing. You know, I still am struggling to find out. So if we break it down, right, I think what it all comes down to is realistically, where does your team stand right now? For me, I have Baker a hair above Tua, with Tua having a little more upside. I do think that Tua could become something, but he has a little more risk. Stephon Diggs is a better receiver than Justin Jefferson. I know we love Justin Jefferson. The guy had literally zero touchdowns on the road. That's kind of important because you play half your games not at home.
Wait. Is that real?
That's real. That's real.
I did not know that.
I didn't know that either. Yeah.
Fun fact, if you look at Kirk Cousins, he averaged...
That's why Mike's going to host the show.
He averaged three touchdowns at home, and I think he hit three touchdowns once on the road. Like, the Vikings are bad away from Minnesota. So you have that. And then second, like we've talked about, which is kind of a flyer type thing. So I think if you make the trade for Diggs and Baker, the second... Let's just put that off to the side. Nobody actually cares. If you make the trade... For Diggs and Baker, you should be a competitor. You should be playing for floor rather than ceiling. And if you're not a competitor, I like taking the risk of flipping Baker and Diggs for Jefferson and Tua. So to me, if I look at this and I want everyone to be happy, because you know me, I like happiness.
Mm-hmm.
If the competitor got Baker and Diggs and the lower half team got Tua and Jefferson, congratulations. You made a perfect trade, and I'm proud of you. If it's the reverse, y'all both screwed up. And if you're both competing, then the team who gave Diggs and Baker may have just cost themselves a chance of the championship. Like, that's how close this is, that I could see either side based on where you feel like you're going to fall in the standings. And I really like trades like this where I don't think anyone is walking away upset. And I don't think anyone has completely submarined their team. I just really like this trade. Very even coin flip type trade.
I think to me, it was easily the Tua and Justin Jefferson side for me, mostly because I have Tua ahead of Baker. I mean, Baker has this inflated value for some reason that I don't understand. I think because he's in his mid-20s, and he has perceived security, and he's basically a QB 18-ish kind of guy. At least that's what he's been so far in his career. And to it, I mean, he hasn't done anything so much that makes him so much greater than Tua to begin with. So, and like Mike said, Tua has more upside. I mean, he's going into his second year. Maybe he is going to be better than that. He's got improved weapons. So we'll see what happens with him. And Jefferson, I agree with Mike said too, though. I mean, if you're a contender, I can see wanting the Baker Diggs side. But Jefferson is definitely higher value-wise right now. And I don't know that we can say for certain that he won't outproduce Diggs even this year. I mean, I think we have to expect Josh Allen to regress, which means Diggs is probably going to regress some. I mean, Allen took that huge jump, but I don't think we can expect necessarily those passing numbers year after year now. So, given the value and given that I don't think the production is a massive reduction on the younger side, I think you have to go there even with the second thrown in with Baker and Diggs.
Yeah. Okay. So everything you guys just said, except I kind of do think Baker and Tua are the same exact thing. The only thing that holds Baker, that has held Baker back, is that dude needs consistency ever at some point in his life. And he's finally seeming to maybe get that. And they are starting to build the team as a running team. And you even saw, as the year went on, they let him throw the ball a little more. They let it do a little bit more complicated pass work. It wasn't just run the ball 40 times and throw the ball, like opposite of the Seahawks football. Run the ball 40 times, throw the ball 12, even though you got Russell frickin' Wilson, but that's not what we're talking about right here. I think they will work their way towards a medium, even though they do have two fantastic running backs. And if anything, that will just lead to Baker being insanely efficient. Tua will be efficient because he's just that damn good. You know, I really do believe in Tua. I do believe he's awesome. I do love the fact that they picked up Fuller and drafted Waddle, because that's more of the players he's used to playing with. So I think it all works out great. But honestly, purely value-wise, to me, you cross them off because they're close enough that it's dealer's choice at that point. The receivers. Man, if Diggs were 2 years younger, this would be another scratch-off to me, like the two of them, and then it's just free seconds, so you take the Diggs side. Diggs is getting older. People still don't put him, like, to me, in redraft, he should have talk for wide receiver one, you know, talk. I think I just used the word talk too many times. Like, he should be in discussion as the wide receiver one for redraft. That's a better way to word it. And it's not there, and I think that's ridiculous. But again, we're talking Justin Jefferson, and while it's really weird to say a dude has his faults when he just came off of a 14 touchdown year, or whatever the hell he did, he's not going to do that every single year. But what comes down to is he's a very good wide receiver. He is now the best wide receiver on his team. Sorry, Adam Thielen people. He's 31 and Jefferson's like 22. His value is fine. He can have that good year of 1,200 yards and 10 touchdowns, and his value will not go down. And that is honestly the only reason I would feel good taking the Jefferson side, is absolutely purely based on value. Jefferson is safe. Well, Diggs will go down no matter what, because he's already 28. And that sucks, because I don't agree with it, but that's what it is. Like, that's, you know, doesn't matter what I think. It's what everyone else in the league thinks. But like you said, if you are just going for that championship, hell yeah, give me Diggs. we do our best just to talk about value, but again, context absolutely matters, and everything Mike said is absolutely right. If you're going for that ship, you want Diggs on your team. It is absolutely 100%. Even if Allen does regress, even if Gabe Davis gets more involved or whatever, anything like that, doesn't matter. Diggs is still awesome. Diggs is probably the best route runner in this freaking league. He is very, very good. He is safe, if nothing else, with it. We've seen his ceiling. Justin Jefferson, we honestly don't know what he's going to turn into, and he does have those floor games of like 7 points. Mm-hmm. And Diggs is getting 7 catches a game no matter what. You know, so like, you know, and then there's yards on top, so I think there's more to that. So good trade, fellas. And I know it's very same tier-ish, but like, we could I love that it's same tier-ish, but there's story behind it. Like, either I have no idea which two teams did this trade, but we painted a narrative where it matters. We're having fun.
I like it.
Oh, and Justin Run DFF throws in there, I want the Tua because at worst he's Baker, and that is actually a very fair statement. Like, if worst comes to worst and Baker and Tua did lose something in that hip injury or those ankle injuries, he'll still be insanely safe and accurate, and that's absolutely fine.
Yep.
Okay. Whew. All right. Well, unfortunately, that is all of our Trade Addicts trades. So we're going to move on to listener questions. We're just going to go down in order. So let's start with at @r_AdamArmor. I'm glad I slowed that down and I was able to read that, because if I tried to read that fast, it would have been a mess. So he wants to talk about positional trends and if there is value to be had in rotating towards those positional values. For example, running backs versus wide receivers, QBs versus running backs. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I feel like the answer is just yes, right? Like, you know, zag when everyone's zigging or that kind of thing. The thing is, they don't happen. Like, trade value, the amount of trades that go, like, there's usually a wave about it, whether you're a veteran, whether you're young. It's not really positional. The only thing that there are positional trends is running backs and older people are worth more when points are being scored. But, like, positional, like, whole-scale positional trends, like, we went on wide receivers for what, like, from 2014 to, like, maybe 2018, and then we got back on running backs. Mm-hmm. Like that's, like, we're talking, like, 4 or 5 years until Bill Belichick decides to change the league again, right? Like, because that's pretty much what it is, right? Whenever Bill Belichick decides to change what he's doing. So, yeah, absolutely, on a small scale, in a draft, if we're talking, I say yes. I'm drafting wide receivers because everyone else is drafting quarterbacks and running backs. On a bigger sense, I think it's tough to take advantage of that.
I think now, on a bigger sense, there's obviously a gravitation towards quarterbacks.
And super first round of Superflex, absolutely.
Yeah. Which we all know I'm gravitating away from.
Yeah, and that is very fair, because that really wasn't the case as much last year. Last year, there was, what, four-ish quarterbacks in the first round? Mm-hmm. Now there's, like, 10.
Yeah.
So I guess that is a trend we're seeing right now. So absolutely, pull, you know, hashtag particularly Petrella drafted. You know, just...
Trade back into the second and grab those running backs.
Get your 4 seconds and 2/3 and just kill the draft. Only to come in second place to my awesome team.
So I think the big thing that I've been wrestling with, and I've talked to Zach Reed about this online, and I've talked to a few people, is this is the first time, and as you know, I've been playing fantasy since they invented cars, and
since before most of the people listening were born. Okay,
exactly. Yeah. Sorry, youngsters. Hope you're enjoying your kombucha. But
damn hipsters.
But this is the first time that I can say that there is probably like 20 wide receiver ones, which is wild. The depth of the position, the way that teams have now been supporting two wide receivers, almost in every team when you look at it, besides the Jets, which you don't want anybody on that team. Most teams, and my Patriots, I guess we might as well be fair, most teams are now supporting two fantasy relevant wide receivers that are going to be matchup dependent. Who's covering who has over the top coverage, who has, you know, locked down by a Jalen Ramsey, Stephon Gilmore type. It really changes the game. Like, we went over my fishbowl team, and, you know, in the 7th to 12th round, I'm pulling Tyler Lockett, Tyler Boyd, Deontay Johnson, players that you could realistically expect to finish in the top 15 this year. So what it comes down to is, realistically, can you pick those difference makers? Like, can you tell the difference between a Devontae Adams and a DeAndre Hopkins? One of which, if you went to Devontae Adams, I mean, he was outscoring almost every running back in the league last year. So great. If you went Hopkins, well, now you're running a risk. Then you factor in the running backs and the fragility of the position, the injury of the position. And this is a long-winded way of saying I go early tight end. because running backs, I have no dang clue who's going to get hurt and who isn't. With wide receivers, I can pull them in later rounds. And with quarterbacks, we're still finding value in the Kirk Cousins, the Derek Carr tier. You know, hell, even you can get Jared Goff when people aren't paying attention and still roll him as your quarterback too. And as long as you've stacked the team around him, he'll be okay. He's not going to be great, but he'll be all right. And he'll put up points. So for me, the only positional advantage that I'm really targeting is tight end. I will pay a premium for a tight end. And that is at any premium level. In the Trade Addicts League, hell yeah, I'm paying through the nose to get one of those three, four, you know, even down to Hawkinson number five tight ends. I will pay a pretty penny. Pick which one of my kids you want, plus which arm. I'm fine. I'll figure out how to right lefty if you need me to. Tight end is the position that is changing the game right now. Early tight end is what I'm going, because after five, I'm not comfortable starting them. So what I always look at is in the first round, right? Second round, would I rather have Tyreek Hill and Tyler Higbee or Travis Kelce and Deontay Johnson? And the answer is obvious to me. It is obviously the Kelce combination, and it's not particularly close for me in terms of comfort level. So the only positional advantage that I'm rolling with right now is tight end. And the reason for that is running backs get hurt, quarterbacks you can still find a little later, and hell, wide receivers. I mean, wide receivers go 12 rounds deep at this point.
I just have to say, I love this guy because I am so elite.
Should
team
we
elite
just let
end.
Him talk the rest of the show and I not know. Bother? Like, holy shit, man.
But I love the you can find value at QB later, elite tight end. I mean, I have Kittle, Kelce, Waller, Hocker, or Pitts on about 90% of my team. So
I love it.
One of them. So I'm right there with Mike. I loved everything that just came out of his mouth.
Whew. All right. So we're going to move on to a conversation that became a little heated in the Cool Kids Club over the past week. It was like a day or two ago. Tom asked the question of, I don't remember how he exactly worded it, but it was pretty much the idea behind selling a young stud wide receiver in a rebuilding team.
I think he used Justin Jefferson as an example. Or somebody did. I don't know if that came from him.
Yeah, it went pretty crazy after a while. And I got to be honest, I did not read it all. It went fast, and I was like, oh, I missed 136 messages. So what are we talking about, guys?
I did read it, and yes, it was a little heated.
Yeah, so I definitely moved on about that. So no, I'm going to go first because then Mike's going to say all the right answers. So I don't want to let him just go, yeah, okay, cool. I do my best not to. Okay, first of all, let's assume this is super flex. If it's one quarterback, really hard to no, you shouldn't. Unless it's all you got. If your team is literally trash and Justin Jefferson, you sell Justin Jefferson because you got nothing else to do. But in super flex, I would sell Justin Jefferson if it got me a young quarterback and another young wide receiver. Like, that's really what it comes down to. It comes down to what's the rest of your team, because how long do you want this to take? You know, like, you're going to need to break down your big bad assets into smaller, fingers crossed, big bad assets, right? Like, if you could turn Justin Jefferson into, I'm trying to think of like a Tua and Visca and a first or a second. Like, yeah, you do that, right? Like, because you're getting that young, like, again, assuming Justin Jefferson is all you have, like, you get that young quarterback, that young wide receiver you hope is going to be a thing. And then you're getting a pick on top of it, which either A, you're rebuilding, so you use that pick, or B, you go and turn that into something else. You know, you keep moving it around to keep getting those. My real answer is, since A, I'm such a wide receiver guy that it hurts my soul to trade away young wide receivers on a rebuild, because that's what you're supposed to be building around. But if you have to, you have to. That's really all I got, is if you've got nothing else to do, or if you're just bored, let's face it, because I'm me, you can, you shouldn't. That's going to be my final answer on this. If you have to, cool. If you don't have to, you shouldn't. But I'm not saying don't, because I shouldn't give advice that I wouldn't follow myself, though I do that all the time. Like, do what you can to hold on to them. But if you are going to trade them, don't trade them just for picks, because that's stupid. Like, trading Justin Jefferson for like two, three firsts What do you do? You're not going to get Justin Jefferson. Like, chances are you're not getting Justin Jefferson out of those three picks. Like, you got lucky as hell chances if you drafted Justin Jefferson. Like, usually you don't get this good of a player at the 111. And it's just the sort of the way it is. So turn him into at least one asset that will retain their value. And in like in the players I listed before, Tua is, unless the team Dolphins trade, I almost said Texans because I was about to say Deshaun Watson. Like, unless Deshaun Watson clears all of whatever he's going through and the Texans trade him to Miami, Tua's value is fine through this year and next year. Even if he has a bad year, he'll still be the starter and he'll still be safe. And that's the baseline of what you want in a rebuild. Clearly you want to go higher than that, but that's the baseline you want. And that's what I'm going to say on the subject.
I think you said a lot of it, what I was thinking there too. And I'm not as big a wide receiver guy as you, or we all know I'm not that big of a quarterback guy, but in a rebuild, I do agree. That's the only time I care about the fact that those two positions you're going to get decent length out of and hold value longer and all that kind of stuff that people say about quarterbacks and wide receivers. And I think that the argument that was mainly other side basically in the chat was that you're hoping that any of these pieces become Justin Jefferson. So I think a lot of it comes down to what you said is how bad the team is around them. And I think the other big point that you said is that you should never be trading these guys for just picks. Anytime I'm rebuilding, I'm always trying to not, unless it's an old guy for like one pick, like a Thielen for a first or something like that, if you can get it, which you probably can't anymore. But if you're trading a Jefferson or trading some valuable asset, you got to break it down into, player, plus a pick or two players plus a pick or something like that. But so I think you said a lot of it already. And I tend to lean with what you said is that I'm trying to hold on to him, but I don't have any qualms about moving him if I don't have much else to do to sell around him. So I'll let Mike finish up if he has anything to add.
Yeah, I think, what we talked about was rebuilding should never be more than a year to a year and a half. These people that are perennially rebuilding are just bad at fantasy football. So what I'm looking for is, if I'm going to move Justin Jefferson, I'm looking for an equal talent, especially if I don't think I'm going to compete. Can I find an equal talent in a worse situation? And can I get that, equal or close to equal talent plus something else in hopes that that situation changes? And, what I'm getting at is, realistically, you brought up Justin Jefferson, and the team that I would be targeting is the team that has Jerry Jeudy. And what I'd be looking to do is I'd be looking to get a Jerry Jeudy plus for Justin Jefferson, feeling that realistically, if someone's looking to make that move, kind of what we talked about, the Tua trade, I have a year where I'm not competing. Denver is going to fix their quarterback situation the next year. And as much as people want to tell you how great Justin Jefferson is, which he is, don't get me wrong, Jerry Jeudy is as talented of a football player as Justin Jefferson. I believe that in my soul. He has a worse situation. He came into a situation where I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he had the second least percentage of catchable passes thrown to him. That's a problem.
One of the games, it was a wide receiver throwing the ball.
Yeah, exactly. And then people talk about his drops. Stop it. Stop it with the drops. We don't count drops in fantasy football. You shouldn't either. So those are the types of moves that I'm always looking to make is, can I eventually end up even plus? Can I get something else out of this? So to your point, yeah, never trade Justin Jefferson just for picks. You can bet your ass if I'm rebuilding, I'll trade him for Jerry Jeudy in the first. 100%. Wouldn't even bat an eye. If you tell me I could get Jerry Jeudy and Tua, I would be thanking my lucky stars. I would smash accept that trade as a rebuilder. And what you have to do when you're playing fantasy football is stop falling in love with players. They don't care about you. You shouldn't love them either.
Calvin really, Ridley loves me too. You shut your mouth.
I'm sure he does. But realistically, the idea of having Justin Jefferson is more valuable than actually having him on your roster. There's plenty of ways to replace that value. But Jerry Jeudy plus for Justin Jefferson is legitimately the perfect rebuilding move. That's what you're trying to do. What you're getting is 90 cents on your dollar plus a dime that might be able to turn into a quarter. I mean, that's how you play this game. And if you can't play this game, redraft is for you, because dynasty players have to know when and how to make these moves. And Justin Jefferson, let's be honest, can't go up much more in value. He could have a Davante Adams type year, and where's he going to end up? Wide receiver one? A lot of people already have him there. Just like with Kyle Pitts, as much as I want to see what this monster of a human can do, if you're a trader, you have to look at the fact that he very well may be at peak value. Now, I don't think that value will drop, so you can enjoy having him on your team. But where the hell is it going to go up? People are already expecting him to be Mike Ditka and Rob Gronkowski his rookie year. I mean, so if you really want to win, if you want to just cheer for these guys, hell, it's a game. Have fun. If you have fun owning Jefferson, rostering Jefferson, I'm trying to get out of that lingo, mm-hmm. My apologies. If you have fun rostering Jefferson and Kyle Pitts, do it. That's cool. But if you're asking me how to win, Judy plus for Jefferson is how you win.
That's also why you join like 30 leagues, so you can have bad teams where you have the guys you like on them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm not in 30 leagues, in case my wife has her ear to the ground, because I'm in the basement. But I do have my just in case shares of almost every single player in the league at this point, just so, you know, if they do hit off, I'm like, no, I got a share. It's fine.
I bought in early.
I got it. The only player I can think of I do not have, and I don't think I've ever had on any of my teams, is Christian McCaffrey.
Oh, really?
It's a tough one to miss on.
Well, I totally missed on the rookie draft because I was an idiot and drafted Corey Davis 1-on-1 all over the place. And
he doesn't like to buy running backs.
And after that, it just got too expensive, and I don't like to pay up for running backs.
But he does have like 50% rostership of Calvin Ridley.
I do. I do. It's bad. It's not bad. It's great. It worked. This worked out wonderfully for me.
Yeah, it's looking pretty nice for this year. It
absolutely does. Oh man, I got a wonderful, wonderful, I think it was from Jake Earl. Oh man, he sent me this trade offer where it was like literally like four of my starter guys for Calvin Ridley. I'm like, am I going to start Calvin Ridley in every position? What do you want me to do, man? Come on. And it was like really just, I'm sure, like he looked at it, he's like, yeah, no, my bad. You know, you like Ridley. I went nuts. And I'm like, I don't blame you. If I had a whiskey in my hand, I might have said yes. But that leads me to, I want to have a little bit of a discussion. I know we're actually running longer than I thought we would, but woo. I just want to say this out loud. Okay. If you are offering four players to get one, 80% of the time, just say no. Don't do it. Don't hit the, actually, you know what? 100% of the time, say no. Here's why. Because 80% of the time, you are sending one okay guy and three trash players for one very good player. And no, I'm not saying that's what you did, Jake. But still, it just wasn't something I was going to do. Or you have what Rocky got that one time, where I think it was Riley sent like an entire starting lineup for one of your quarterbacks. And I can't remember who it was. I think, was it Aaron Rodgers, maybe?
No, he sent it for Christian McCaffrey. I got Aaron Rodgers.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah. Like
Rodgers, Claypool, a first, and something else. I can't remember.
Yeah. He got like half a starting lineup and a first. It was ridiculous. Like,
oh, Montgomery was the other piece.
Yeah. Like, look at, like, oh my, like, four for ones don't, you, there's a reason you shouldn't do them. And that's exactly why. Either they're just bad and no one's going to trade one player for a bunch of people he's not going to start and one dude he doesn't feel great about starting, or you're making a mistake. There's no other real way to put it. Like, unless you are so damn good in your league where you just crush everyone because you have every good player and you're like, let me turn these four great players into one Christian McCaffrey, more power to you at that point, I guess.
I think, but that's like what Riley's thinking was.
Oh, yes. He also did say he can't make any trades today because his team is already perfect.
Yeah.
That's fair.
That, yeah, right? You can't really argue with that. I just needed to say that out loud because recently I've been on both sides of offers of four for ones where it's either you want me to give up what for one dude? What? No. And then it's, oh, that guy's kind of good, but that guy's not going to start. That guy's not going to start. And oh, I hope I would never have to start that guy. You know, so it's just like four for ones. Just they're not a thing. They shouldn't be a thing. Don't make it a thing.
I literally don't think I've ever sent a four for one.
Don't get me wrong. Like I always say, do as I say, not as I do. I'm sure I've done it before, and I'm sure it's been ugly. But like, you shouldn't. Like fetch is never going to be a thing. Stop trying to make it happen. Four for ones, not going to happen.
Nope.
Whew. All right. Next question. Where are we? At Renshaw Fantasy. Who is the villain of his SFB 11? It's bedtime. Who's the villain of your SFB 11 division this year?
Man, so we don't have a repeat of last year. Like, there's not
Does that mean one it's you?
So it must be
if
me.
You don't know who the villain is, it's you.
It has to be me. Yeah, this is like the rounder situation. If you can't spot the sucker in 5 minutes. I guess it might be. I've been trying to figure out because they're such nice people. I mean, I'm in Scott Fish's division and like surrounded by nice people. You know, people are like, hey, I'm really mad at you for sniping me, but great pick.
Good and pick, like, man. Yeah, I know.
And it is funny because tomorrow's article that I told you is coming out is about trash talk, and that's kind of my thing, and I feel bad because they're so nice. It's gonna be me, and I'm sorry ahead of time, friends. Still love you, hard hands. For those who aren't seeing the camera, you know, still love, all love. But yeah, at some point, I am going to turn up the intensity. I am gonna flip the switch, and I'm gonna say things that you probably wouldn't expect coming out of such a wonderful human being like myself. But it's all to make the league more fun. So I apologize, but at some point, Twitter's going to hear about your mistakes, and we're all going to laugh at your expense in good fun and for charity. So just remember that. I love you. Hard hands, but yeah, it's me.
I love you. Hard hands. I'm going to effing crush you.
I'll tell you, a lot of people said that the projections may be off. There's reasons why they're wrong. They did pick the right winner of the Beastie Boys division. That's all that
matters.
That right. I know. Yeah, that I think we all know. And that's cool. I mean, you guys made mistakes, and I expected you to. But you're in the fishbowl, which is great for you. That's wonderful. Big
there ups. You go.
You made it.
Big picture.
Yeah. Now it's time for me to show you how action games played. But yeah, cool. That was a fun question. Sorry, now I feel like a jerk. Sorry, everyone in the division. Sorry, mom. My bad. But yeah.
Your mom's in the division with you? That's awesome.
No, it'd be cool if she was, though. My mom legitimately does no idea what she's doing. With fantasy football. She's very, very great at like momming. Like she's good at like being a mother, but fantasy football, yeah, no useless. So
okay, so now we saved our sandwiches for last.
Okay.
At Wrecked Fantasy, who will get to our podcast in like a week and a half because he's just listening to last week's episode today. What is the best sandwich and what player would you compare to that sandwich?
All right, so the one-on-one of sandwiches is the Italian. It's like people have tried to debate me on this, and there's a lot of things that like are opinions in this world, but the Italian being the number one of sandwiches is just, it's just a fact.
Now, wait. Are we talking of cold cut sandwiches or every sandwich?
No, every sandwich known to man.
Okay.
The Italian is number one. And if you disagree, it's because you haven't had the right one. Which is fine. Like, you know, all those tweets where people say, you know, sure, sex is great, but have you done X?
Yeah.
You haven't met the right person. And same thing with the Italian. Like if you're saying, sure, Italians are great, but have you had X? You haven't had the right Italian. You're doing it wrong. The right Italian with huts, oil, and vinegar is like it is the closest thing to heaven you are ever going to find, like on bread. So yeah, by far the 101. Again, fact, not opinion. So anybody who is looking to argue, literally turn to the wall because you're just saying dumb shit that you don't want.
Hold on, I want to finish building this sandwich. So you have the meats, you have the cheeses.
Yep.
I heard you say oil and vinegar.
Yep.
What other fixings do you put on your sandwich? Lettuce, tomato, onions?
Yeah, so you're going to need shredded lettuce. You're going to need the onions. I tend to shy away from the tomatoes. I'm just not a raw tomato guy. Not my thing. Nah, no thanks. Pickles, and you want them really diced up nicely. And then the hots. I mean, realistically, if you can't handle the hots, just have a ham and cheese with chips on it because you're not ready for actual sandwiches. So to have that put together, and you want true mortadella. Like, you don't want to be messing around. This isn't a Subway sandwich, guys. Like, get it right and stop telling me about Jersey Mike's. Seriously, you're telling on yourself, and it's sad. I want you to go to your local deli and I want you to ask them their last name. And if it doesn't have five vowels in it, go to the next one until you find somebody who basically can do nothing but make this sandwich for you. In my neighborhood, it was Bob, and Bob made this sandwich. That was magic. It was like, Beethoven's symphony, like on bread. He put it together. It was perfect. The ratios were good. The amount of everything was good. The meats were high quality. Everything was perfect. And you would eat this sandwich and you would be crying when it was over. Like, you'd be happy it happened, but sad that it was over. It's an experience and one that, true sandwich lovers know that the Italian is the 101. So I guess that brings us to Bobby's question, which, hopefully he doesn't get hurt in the next 2 weeks before he listens to the podcast. But the Italian is Josh Allen. I mean, how do you not love Josh Allen? Like, how do you not just love this man? Like, everything he does, everything he stands for, like, Josh Allen is very close to a perfect human being, just like the Italian is the perfect sandwich. It is honestly, like, there's no better comp that you can give to Josh Allen. I mean, people want to comp him to players, but the Italian sandwich is the perfect comp to Josh Allen. It's flawless.
He always seems to have that happy to be there feel about him. Mm-hmm. And I love that. It's like very early in his career, Cam Newton, anytime he had the ball in his hands, he was smiling. And mm-hmm. I loved him for that. And then he started dabbing, and I freaking hate that stuff. So, but clearly nothing about him as a human being and nothing about him as a football player. It's just now my son dabs all the freaking time, and I freaking hate it. that was beautiful, man. And now I'm going to go, like, there's a couple of Italian delis around here that I'm going to have to, like, go to one every day just to find that, like, the best one of the sandwiches out of all of them.
Just call me and hand them the phone. we'll make some magic happen for you.
Is it tomorrow yet? I'm excited.
That's what sandwich love is like. That's have trouble sleeping because you know what's coming.
I'm a convert. Here we are. Okay, last question. Oh, this is kind of very similar. At Zachy NFL says, if the most reliable and classic sandwich is the peanut butter and jelly, what player is the PB&J of fantasy? Before we actually get into that, we need to ask about your peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Okay.
From the basics of peanut butter and jelly sandwich, smooth or crunchy, and what kind of jelly?
Oh, this is easy. So it's smooth peanut butter, it's grape jelly, and it's Wonder Bread. Like, when you press it down, if it doesn't make a handprint, you did it wrong. Like, that handprint is important. That is the seal of approval of a true peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And by the way, while we're on the subject, you are pressing the jelly into place. You are not spreading it. We are not Martha Stewart here. You are spreading the peanut butter on the bottom. You are putting a jelly blob on the top, and you are marrying those two. And that handprint that you put in not only seals the sandwich for perfection, but also makes sure the jelly is perfectly spread out. Stop using strawberry jelly. Your mom lied to you. It is grape jelly, smooth peanut butter, Wonder Bread, with the handprint, cut diagonally, game, set, match.
Man, you're my hero. Do you have a fancy peanut butter and jelly sandwich, though? Like, do you, like, grill and put bacon on there, or banana is actually wonderful? Do you have a fancy PB&J sandwich you like to go to?
So it's not a PB&J, but what I have that is phenomenal is you take a pita bread, a flatbread, and you put peanut butter, banana, granola, and honey.
Oh.
And then you grill it.
Oh.
Into basically what becomes like a quesadilla in a way. It is a flatbread sandwich that, you can panini press it, but you need that heat to melt all the goodness together. And then you just go at that little half moon and you enjoy life. And that is something that it's an experience that you won't forget and you'll return to time and time again, because it's true love.
I could not tell you how happy I am that we talked tonight. Like, okay, before I just start drooling and like short circuit my microphone, who is the PB&J of the NFL, of your fantasy team?
Chris Carson. It's Chris Carson. It's somebody that realistically you make the decision to go get Chris Carson, and people are like, it's just Chris Carson. And then you realize it's not just Chris Carson. It is reliable. It keeps you happy. It keeps you full. And it tastes good. Chris Carson is the guy that people scoff at. You know, the mucky mucks will say, hey, I don't want Chris Carson. I'm going to go find the next big thing. And they'll sit there and they'll leave you with your Chris Carson peanut butter jelly sandwich while they go venture the earth for something that has greens or sprouts on it. They'll be unhappy. You'll be thrilled. You'll have Chris Carson. He'll be a running back one. No questions asked. And you'll never regret that decision.
I got nothing, man. Like,
We're just done. We're done, Russ.
I mean, I'm glad that's the end of our show sheet, and this is the end of our show, because I don't know how to speak anymore. Like, this was, I hope you had as good of a time as I have, because this has been magical for me, and I'm sweating a little bit. But we are at the end of our show sheet, so this is the end of our show. Before we go, remind everyone who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do.
At Daddy's Home, I talk about sandwiches on Twitter. You find my football musings and other stuff on the Aging Cooler, and coming soon, Hanging with Daddy podcast launching end of this month.
So effing excited for A, to be on that, and B, to listen to all the episodes afterwards. And that goddamn intro, so good.
Russ, before we finish up, I had mentioned before the show that if we got an hour and a half out of this show sheet, I was going to be so impressed. I am impressed, but it's as much with Mike as it is with you, Russ.
1,000% it was all Mike. Like, yes, let's face Mike, it, half the show we sat back and let him go. Yes, absolutely.
I did not think there was any way, because Russ loves to make these shows 90 minutes. You know, a lot of podcasts try and keep their podcast to an hour. Russ is disappointed if we don't go 90. And I said there was no way we were getting 90 minutes out of what we had on the show sheet tonight. And you pulled it off, Mike. So I'm proud of you.
Yeah, this was fun, guys. Honestly, I could have done another 90, except for the fact that I'm old and I'm going to have to pee and go to bed soon. But this was an absolute blast.
I've already done one of those, and I haven't left my chair. joking. Okay, well, we've mentioned it before. I'll mention it again. Patreon.com/TradeAddictsPod. You could have seen my drooling face as Mike talked about these wonderful, wonderful sandwiches. Also jumped in the chat. We said, you know, we brought up something that Justin was saying before, but also, like we said, the Cool Kids Club, the awesome, awesome GroupMe chat, where first of all, like almost, you know, our B team of Justin and Scott and Andrew Hall, who's Rocky's new co-host. I mean, everyone's from the Cool Kids Club at this point. So many smart freaking people in that chat, and it's just a freaking fun time with all the people that are in there. What else do we do? ffpodshirts.storeenvy.com. You can buy a sticker with this man's Twitter handle on it. But you could also show that shirt for our patrons. I'm wearing a Coco shirt, but he came to the concert and the band is coming to see.
I got awkward, but you know, I want to show his fanboying. So
yeah, and it worked. Definitely, you played yourself up, and it just everything worked out. You got pulled up onto stage and everything. but besides all of our awesome stuff, all of the DAP Network shows, Superflex Super Show, Dynasty Diagnostic, Devi Marketplace, shows. Right now, I say right now, I'm ever going to take this stuff down. SFB11 stuff galore. We have tried to make a t-shirt or a sticker for every single division, and still, if you still don't have one for y'all's for your division, DM me, let us know. We will try and make one for you. It is super tough with some of these people because everyone just has album covers with their face on it and we can't use faces. But we'll try. We will do everything within our power to get you a shirt, to get you a sticker, to get you something. But also every single penny will go to Fantasy Cares. And, you know, regardless if my math is right or not, because I try and put a number on the page. And also, please just appreciate the work I put into all of the ridiculous names on everything, because clearly we can't use real names. So I put joke names on everything and really stupid, stupid descriptions. So if anything, just like amuse me about how amusing I find myself. But you get awesome, awesome shirts, awesome, awesome stickers, mugs, anything else we make, and every penny goes to charity. I am Russ Fisher at Dynasty Ad House. He is Rocky Petrella at Dynasty FF Addict. Listen to podcasts, subscribe, rate, review. I'm out of everything. Good night, everyone. This was way too good of a show for us to have. I don't know how to feel about it. Like, there's no going up from here.
it's all downhill, like Mike was saying about Twitter.
The shark has been jumped, everyone. It's been a fun ride.